Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TT Timeless back in the cafe, the kitchen, or the city of sports, or however you look at this thing. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. I just ready to get this show underway. The calling number is 929-477-2759. I got my co-host and big brother with me, R. Keezy, a.k.a. Mr. King. Welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good, Thomas, man. Excited about being back here inside Sports City.
I gotta cheer him up, Sports City. I don't know, man. I got to try and lift his spirits, man. It's 'tis of the season, man. I'm trying to get that holiday anniversary. I'm trying to get all up in his system, man. So without any further ado, I know I got some cooking to do, some ground to make up, missing some significant time in the kitchen, but we're back at it, especially in front of the doorstep of the year 2019. I have a lot of interesting topics to throw around the kitchen, but the first one I'm going to talk about is probably the elephant in the room with the trade impact or a situation that just happened, sending Trevor Ariza to the Washington Wizards. And I want to see how you feel this can impact that team as they struggled out of the gates. They are slowly trying to find their consistency. Do you think Trevor Ariza can help the disarray, if you will, of what's going on within this team? I mean, they have Dwight Howard out. They have a lot of interesting names, but they haven't put it together to get above or equal to 500. Your thoughts?
Trevor Ariza's presence back in Washington hopefully can help settle whatever might possibly be going on in the locker room and bring those guys together. I'm not convinced those players are happy playing with one another these days. There's a lot of complaining about what's happening, you know, in games, a lot of frustration and irritation. It's obvious when you spend so much time, you know, arguing or fussing and debating a call with an official that you feel like he missed. I mean, look, guys have been playing basketball for a long time now, and officials blow calls or miss calls or have a different view than what you have as a player. But I've yet to see an official overturn or change a call mid-game, like as the game is in its flow. It's not going to happen. So those things have to be settled. And hopefully the professionalism and the experience, the championship experience Trevor Ariza brings to the table, winning that championship with the Los Angeles Lakers, can settle those guys in Washington in terms of how it changes things with on-court performance remains to be seen. We know he's a 3-and-D guy, and he's capable of knocking down shots and defending his own man at a high level. But all that ails Washington is much bigger than just bringing in Trevor Ariza and saying be magic in terms of work some type of miracle and make everything that happened to us go away, turn it around, right this ship for us. I don't think Trevor Ariza is that guy, and I don't think there is a guy that could come to the Washington Wizards and immediately just change everything that's going on down there, Timeless. I mean, look, it's gotten out of hand. Things have started to pretty much, I think, get away from management. I think things are starting to get away a little bit from head coach Scott Brooks and John Wall, Bradley Beal. I think those guys need to be separated, if you will. And so if the organization is ready to bite the bullet and move in an entirely new direction, it's time to blow it up. It's starting to become a circus.
Did they let go of Coach Scott Brooks in the process as well?
I don't blame Scott Brooks. I think let's take a note from Masai Ujiri. Let's look north to the Toronto Raptors. I think what we see in Washington is exactly what Masai Ujiri was concerned with in Toronto. You've given it a go with your dynamic backcourt, and you've been only able to go but so far by adding pieces around them. DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry couldn't get to the Eastern Conference Finals, let alone the NBA Finals. So he made a bold move. I think it's time to start applauding and saluting him as opposed to criticizing. The same thing now, in my opinion, needs to occur in Washington. It's time to separate John Wall from Bradley Beal and go in a different direction. They first must identify who are we going to build around moving forward and then do it, move forward. That's my thoughts, Thomas.
Okay, I just wanted to get that one out of the way because that was kind of the elephant in the room, if you will. And it's interesting that the next team that I'm going to go to just battle with the team that Trevor Ariza just left. The team that I'm going to is the Boston Celtics, in which I want to throw this out there in the kitchen. What's happening in Beantown? Now, they just lost the game up against the Phoenix Suns, in which they just brought in Kelly Oubre from that trade, which sent Trevor Ariza to D.C. And I don't know if this is a situation where the Suns are just finding themselves with all of the youth that they have within this roster. And if you look at their starting five and the roster that they put out, especially yesterday, I can say in about 2 to 3 years from now, they are going to be extremely tough to stop being the Phoenix Suns. But looking at the situation that the Celtics have been going through, I don't think there's time to be pressing the panic button, if you will, but there is cause for some concern because they are not winning the games that they're notably used to, even though they are in the top five spot in the Eastern Conference. I think they need to worry about what's going on, as in, you know, not losing too much ground to what's in front of them, being the Raptors and the Bucks at least having 9 losses at this point in time. If they continue to slide, they'll start to fall into that 6, 7, 8 talk, and I don't think they will. I don't think they'll fall that far, but this is a raise of the eyebrows, if you will, for the Boston Celtics. Your thoughts on what's going on at this point in time in the season, even though it's December, I know it's early, but just a thought to throw out there in the kitchen.
Well, injuries are part of what's going on in Boston right now, you know, this very moment. You know, guys like Al Horford, Marcus Morris is missing games. You know, Gordon just came back, so he's trying to find a rhythm. Aaron Baines just suffered a hand injury yesterday that's going to require surgery. And then you have the success of guys like Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown last season. Marcus Smart, for the most part, he's been consistently successful in doing what it is he does, bring the energy, make winning plays, came into the league not really being known for a knockdown three-point shooter, but just has a knack for hitting clutch threes in big game moments. So, and then they have an embarrassment of riches when you talk about draft picks along with, you know, with their depth, right? Boston, Timeless, in my opinion, really needs to begin to seek out trades. And everybody keeps talking about hitting the home run, getting Anthony Davis potentially possibly in, you know, Boston, you know, being, you know, in the market in the summertime for notable free agents, the Kawhi Leonards, the Kevin Durants and the like. However, what I think this Boston Celtic team is really in need of is to release those guys who are currently serving in positions off the bench, who Kawhi has kept really feel like they should be starters on other NBA teams right now this season. And so I think what happened last year is beginning to work against the Boston Celtics. And so Danny Ainge, head coach Brad Stevens, they have to put their heads together, in my opinion, and begin to really examine thoroughly, you know, even more carefully than they have to this point, because who am I to second guess these guys? They've done a phenomenal job. And it's easy to be, you know, armchair, you know, quarterback or, you know, backseat coach, if you will, you know, but if you grant me that leeway, I just believe that it is time to move in another direction and with some pieces. And so that's where Boston, in my opinion, really needs to look and head, Timeless, and that is finding the right trade partners that allow them to still have some flexibility, but relinquish some guys of their duties as backup and really give them a legit shot at being starters, because they really do think they're starters on a nightly basis. You hear, Thomas?
I'm sorry, I had it on mute. I was running my mouth. I said, it's interesting enough that the Celtics are able to do their thing at this point in time, especially due to injury, but somehow, some way, they find their way through the woods to get through these situations. And it's almost like the Patriots in football, where it's the next man up situation, and the Celtics did that at least in the last season with Gordon Hayward going down in the first game of the season, and they actually found their way. And I think, I don't even want to call it a personality clash or situation, even though you had Rozier speaking out a bit about Gordon Hayward, things like that. But they are in the midst of the season. The year of 2018 is coming to an end, while we'll turn around and get to the year 2019 and starting to see a lot of these placings or placements of the, you know, at least the top eight or more start to form out as we get closer to the month of February and March. But this is just something that I wanted to throw out there. I mean, they are, you know, within the same realm of losses between the Sixers and the Pacers with 12 apiece, but they still have at least 2 to 3 games less played than them. So we'll see how the outcome of those next couple of matchups come out for the Celtics. But I just wanted to raise my eyebrow around it, because I was actually, and this is me, I was one of the people that actually said the Celtics probably would win the Eastern Conference without LeBron, but there is at least one team who's stepped in the forefront of that, and I will get to them in a little bit. Okay. Now, this is a three-part dish, if you will. So this is a three-course dish, if you will. And the way that I put it, and there's a you know, a drink alongside it. And I call this dish the State of Texas, a.k.a. a cup of coffee, too. So now all three of these teams have awakened, if you will, and I can't really say awakened because Dallas has been doing their thing, trying to stay in the midst of talk, but they're at the ninth seed right now in the Western Conference. But they're right outside of the doorstep, in which the Spurs are now the eighth seed, where they were struggling to at least be in the top eight, which we talked about this in the kitchen and stating that I think Coach Pop would end up turning this thing around. But now they are back into the top eight, and at seventh is the Houston Rockets, where Carmelo's arrival, which should I say, his couple of games being there and then him leaving, it had them in a spell of not finding their consistency, finding their style of play, and now they're finally starting to get things clicking and winning games, and they are on a 5-game winning streak at this point in time. So this is why I say that they are awakened. The Spurs are on a 2-game winning streak as well. Dallas is on the outside also. I don't know how you want to address this, if you want to go team by team, if you want to mix this dish up. I don't care how you want to eat, but I want to put this plate in front of you. The State of Texas, how do you feel about it, Arkeezy? Royce, did you hear me? Are you there, Royce?
I'm sorry. I was doing the same thing you did, talking away while on mute. Apologies. So what I said was that it's interesting that within the standings as in the Western Conference, these teams are seeded 7, 8, and 9 at the current moment, Houston, San Antonio, and Dallas. All that being said, are we all a little bit shocked, as, you know, NBA fans, the astute NBA fan had to know that the departure of Trevor Ariza and Bob Mute was going to create a slide, if you will. And equally as important was assistant coach Jeff Bizdelic, who handled the defensive scheme of things in Houston. So the fact of the matter is that they're on a 5-game win streak, and timeless, the only win streak that's any longer than theirs right now, it belongs to the Brooklyn Nets. I think things are starting to look up for Houston. So 2 games over 500, it's not the problem that it once was. I think at some point we all have to begin to acknowledge that they have recovered to some degree, not where they want to be in the standings, ideally, but they have recovered. They're in the top eight, and I think they'll only get better barring injuries to key pieces. Moving to the San Antonio Spurs, again, here's was rattled with multiple injuries prior to the start of the regular season, and they have rebounded, again, a couple of games over 500, playing well at home, 12-5, struggling on the road. So this is a team right now who just doesn't perform well in someone else's house. Can they fix that? I think they can. I mean, we're still talking about head coach Greg Popovich. He still has a veteran roster in LaMarcus Aldridge, DeMar DeRozan. So when you're 5-10 on the road, in my opinion, I attribute that potentially to schedules, scheduling losses. Are you on the road in a back-to-back? And the fact that they're a young team, and there are some guys who are being asked to do things and play an allotment of minutes that they are not accustomed to, that they have not done heretofore as a San Antonio Spurs. So it's all a learning curve. I think everything's going to work itself out for the San Antonio Spurs moving forward. And then the Dallas Mavericks, which is really a good story when you think about it. I mean, getting Luka Doncic, who is a rookie technically, but you're talking about a guy who's been playing pro ball since the age of 13. And unfortunately for them, here's another team that holds serve very well at home, 13-3, but on the road just can't get it done. They're 2-11. So, again, new pieces, young NBA players attempting to be anchored by, you know, Dirk, who just recently became available, I think, within the last 2 to 3 games. DeAndre Jordan, who's a defensive presence and anchor, but he's not a guy that you would look at and say he can be the leader of the team in terms of going out and getting a bucket. And then Harrison Barnes missed a number of games to start the season. He's still trying to get back in the flow. I think the other night he had 30 points, but he's trying to do all that in a sense in the shadow of this hot, young, highly touted and talked about rookie Luka Doncic. And so are people stepping on one another's toes? Are egos involved? Who knows? But basketball is about chemistry, and we know that most teams play better when everyone in the locker room gets along, when everyone's on the same page, when everyone likes where they're headed, when guys are getting their shot, when guys are getting the opportunity to accomplish and achieve what they're in search of selfishly within the team concept. Some guys want to make the all-defensive team. Some guys want to make the all-rookie team and win, you know, rookie of the year. Some guys want to be defensive player of the year. Another guy might want to lead the league in scoring. Who knows? It's just a part of sports, right? But the Dallas Mavericks, they'll be fine as well. I mean, it's a young team that if they miss the playoffs for the future of that franchise, again, I think it's okay because they need to continue to build. They're similar to the way San Antonio was operating at one point, very veteran-laden, in search of and in need of talent. And sometimes it's just not good to finish in the middle of the pack in that mix. So the Western Conference has caught us all by surprise that 14 out of 15 teams mathematically still have a shot at making the playoffs. So it's a lot of season left, and you know, we're going to keep it locked right here to see how all this shakes out.
Definitely. And I didn't mean to put that mean of a plate in front of you, but I definitely had to get it out just because of the way I wrote it. And I just like the way that it sounded being in the state of Texas, because to me, I didn't know how all of these teams would try to squeeze back into the top eight. And the Dallas Mavericks are sitting right out of it, and they're on a losing streak right now. But they needed this losing streak to fall out of that talk. And Doncic has made a name for himself while he's surrounded by shooters with Wes Matthews and Harrison Barnes also. So it's interesting, and J.J. Barea has actually come back into the talk, if you will, because he was hot when they first won that championship and he kind of fell asleep at the wheel, and now he's back with his name strongly relevant again, a part of this roster. So this is a very interesting situation for the Mavericks. The Spurs are the Spurs. It was interesting to see them out of the top eight and seeing how they would find themselves back in the form. And this is something that Coach Pop has been able to orchestrate. I think, to me, one of the top five best coaches in NBA history. Yeah, I'm putting them in a long lineage of a lot of coaches. I put Pop in that discussion. And for Coach D'Antoni to try and figure this out, I don't think it's more or less the defense that's actually been helping them. I think they've just been finding a way to outfire people, in which they set an NBA record again, making 26 three-point shots in a game just this week as well. So I think they're finding their offensive ways, and knowing that, I mean, the end of the game, you have to outscore the other team, but knowing that D'Antoni doesn't have the same defensive pillars, if you will, a part of this team, they're going to have to go out there and fire it up and see what they can do, at least to stay in the hunt in the Western Conference. Okay. I'm going to go to the Eastern Conference now. The interesting one is the Brooklyn Nets, right, in which Spencer Dinwiddie had just gotten his extension, and I think it's well-deserved, right? But in which, with his extension and the way that the Nets have been playing as of late, it is interesting to me to see how they've been getting this thing to go. And I want to hear your thoughts on Dinwiddie about his extension, if you agree or disagree, and your thoughts on the Nets as well, as they've been up and down in play, but this is a team that they can no longer overlook. They do have talent there.
Well, first thing, who am I to disagree? Like, I don't disagree with Spencer Dinwiddie getting paid and being extended. I think it's the right thing to do in terms of his performance over the last couple of seasons there. He found a home in Brooklyn. I think he started in Chicago or Detroit or vice versa. But at some point in his career early on, I think he wore both uniforms. And because he had potentially to be able to do exactly what he's doing right now in Brooklyn. And, you know, guys recognize when they really can step in and have the kind of career that they envision for themselves. And I think Spencer Dinwiddie was able to see that when he arrived in Brooklyn, that with the talent ahead of him, that they would potentially possibly face some injuries and might not be available on a consistent basis, that he would have a regular role in the rotation, whether it was starter or off the bench. His allotment of minutes really wouldn't vary much. So that allows players to go out and be consistent in terms of their performance. And I think Spencer Dinwiddie is an example of a guy who, whether starting or coming off the bench, received a regular allotment of minutes and found a way to be consistent with his production. He has the ability to score the ball. We know he assists well. He's an outstanding defender. I like Spencer Dinwiddie's game. His field goal percentage is nothing that's going to blow you away. Like, okay, this guy is super efficient. It's not about his efficiency. I think he, you know, while he can score the ball, he's not the most, efficient shooter from the perimeter. But he is a playmaker. He's a good guy for the team. I think he's more of a plus than a minus when it comes to the lineups in Brooklyn. All that being said, a lot of discredit to this seven-game win streak, in my opinion, really goes to the head coach, Kenny Atkinson. He's done an outstanding job of motivating every player in a Brooklyn uniform to play together, play for one another, and to go out and compete and fight back, to the point that from what I'm hearing, this Brooklyn Nets organization is now beginning to make phone calls to other organizations, other teams, timeless, looking for players in terms of, okay, we're ready to make some trades, make some deals, and bring some guys in that might help them take another step within this organization. And we all remember, you know, the drama that happened when they, you know, Mikhail Prokhorov came over and took over ownership of this team. And, I mean, look, he gave away a lot of leverage. He gave away a lot of draft picks. So these guys are just now being in a position now to move in the right direction. They're just now beginning to, you know, have some money available to spend. And let's not forget Caris LeVert, who's currently on the shelf, mending from that ugly injury. And, you know, the fact that they can get Caris LeVert back before season's end, I think this Brooklyn Nets team is really doing all it can to legitimately get into the top eight in the East and compete and not be, which they once were at some point, and that's somewhat a laughing stock. And so I'm thoroughly impressed that they're 7-3 over the last 10 games. They're a 500 team on the road, sitting at 8-8, and they're getting better in terms of defending their home turf. I thought that was a huge win in Brooklyn against the Los Angeles Lakers. So they're 7-10 at home. So D'Angelo Russell's playing well. You're getting everything around. Hollis Jefferson has to offer. And then you got Jared Allen, who's not afraid to be a big man. Like, no matter what your name is, this guy is not making the typical business decision when LeBron James is coming down the lane, right? I mean, look, he was going to be on the poster by blocking the shot or getting dunked on. He chose to block the shot and be talked about for a couple of days. So all that being said, Thomas, the Brooklyn Nets are playing well at this point in the season, and let's see if this young team can keep it up.
Yeah, and I don't know why everybody made a big deal about, you know, Jared Allen blocking the shot. Yeah, it's LeBron James, and yeah, he's a flyer. Like, I can't even overlook the fact that LeBron gets off the floor. But that's going to happen. Him at the rim and Jared Allen, okay, he's 6'11". With length of Kevin Durant, like, he could potentially block a shot. Like, that happened at the rim. Everything, if something happens with LeBron, it's the world around the news. Oh, he got his shot blocked at the rim. It's the ninth time that it happened, and he had over 1,800 dunk attempts. grow up. Like, Jesus, this guy blocked his, oh, is he losing a step? And I love watching people speak on the sport and talk about if LeBron losing a step, then you go block the shot. Like, come on, like, come on. One guy blocked the shot out of 1,800 blocks. Like, get a grip, man. Like, and not to downplay the Nets, because the Nets are playing good ball right now. But it's the Nets, though. Like, come on, now. Like, be real. Like, come on. It's just overhyped on anything that may potentially happen to LeBron. And, especially, it'd be a block shot by a center. It was a power forward, however you want to look at it, however he may have been in the lineup at that given point in time. But more than likely, I'm looking at him as a center. And he protected the rim. It's going to happen. They missed one. They tried to list all of the block shots that LeBron had at the rim. Y'all need to go back to 2011, where Serge Ibaka blocked them at the rim. They didn't even put that one up there. Like they oversell over how these situations. But I'm not taking away anything from the Nets. The Nets, you guys are playing good ball at this point in time. And Spencer Dinwiddie, I've been seeing this as of last year when they made the big stink about him and Andre Roberson's sister getting engaged, and then that game that they played, and how these two were going back and forth. So I've been keeping a close eye to Spencer Dinwiddie ever since, and now that he's actually been putting it all together, every team has been getting it. He's confident in his play. He's been actually scoring the ball well. He's going to the rim now too, instead of just waiting for the last second shot in that shot clock. So it's been good to see what Brooklyn has been doing, especially being a local team where I am at this point in time now. Okay. The next topic I have at hand right now is, and I know this is a very interesting one, and I don't really feel like I need to be chasing this one up, but I am, just because I haven't been in the kitchen and I want to things up. But I call this one the Warriors' state of mind. In which I don't want to call this a problem situation, but knowing that they are losing games, not to say consistently, but they drop a game here and there, and a lot of people are focusing their perspectives, if you will, toward Draymond Green, and saying that teams are actually letting him shoot the three ball. Is this a recipe to get the Warriors to lose games, is let Draymond think that he can knock down these shots, in which he, in years past, he was able to knock down the shot. Now, he is not knocking that shot down consistently, and it's more or less we'll D everybody else. We'll rather just let the lower percentage shooter shoot the ball, and that being Draymond Green. If he comes into the paint or, somewhere near the perimeter or underneath the perimeter, it's a better percentage shot. But if he's forcing up threes, this is a whole different scenario for the Warriors, in which they just lost a recent game also up against the Utah Jazz. Your thoughts on the Warriors' state of mind, if you will.
Well, I think it's just being all blown out of proportion when it comes to the whole Draymond Green missing shots. I heard some of the talk in the industry about, well, this guy hasn't, scored in double figures since Halloween. Like, honestly, who cares? That's not what ails the Golden State Warriors. Anybody, again, who's really paying attention recognizes that this team has made, four trips, or is it five, to the NBA Finals? I mean, I lost count. this group, Draymond, a part of it, has not only been working out in the offseason, not only participating in training camp, not only participating in preseason games, but playing 82-game regular season, playing additional postseason games, first round, second round, conference finals, NBA finals, being crowned champion. Guys are getting banged up. Guys are being distracted by things such as free agency. Guys are buying into the hype of their success. Guys are looking for challenges. There's been so much that was said. I mean, okay, well, this was a team that, at one point went 73-9. Would you expect them to turn right back around and do what, 70-12? I mean, like, when do we ever, find satisfaction with the performance of this group of players, of this assembly of talent that has given us greatness to witness in the game of basketball. So to see, let's just call it some average play out of a guy like Draymond Green, is par for the course, and I think it's fine. It's okay. I mean, let's not panic. Let's calm down, get off the ledge. You don't have to jump. The Golden State Warriors are still very good. They're still going to be right there in the end. I think those guys will still come together when it's winning time, and we'll see that or not Draymond Green continues to stink it up for an entire season when it comes to shooting the basketball, which I don't think is going to happen. But what are we clamoring about? Even after all of that, I'm still asking even myself, what are we clamoring about? Do we all of a sudden want Draymond Green to turn into a 15 to 19 points per game scorer? No. Let Draymond Green be the guy who flirts with triple-doubles. Flirt. I didn't say get him. Flirt. That means he could be 9.5 per game. He could be 9.8 or 9.9. He doesn't have to be 12 points per game for the Warriors to win. He only needs to be able to do what so many good role players of his ilk do, and that is make winning plays, make timely shots. This guy has already gone on record numerous times and said he's trying to win the defensive player of the year. That tells you, I'm thinking more like Ben Wallace. He's not thinking like, let me go out here and get my best, you know, Kevin Durant impression on. Absolutely not. So the Warriors are fine. Losing to Utah in Utah, not a real surprise. I mean, let's be honest. If it's a couple of teams that generally play well at home in the NBA season after season, no matter what kind of roster they have, it's Denver and Utah because of the elevation, right? So the Warriors lost to the Jazz. Not a big deal. It is December. It's not even Christmas Day yet. So let's get off the ledge and let Draymond and the Warriors live a little.
And it's interesting because I don't get to talk about the Warriors in this type of light. That's why I brought this to the kitchen, because I stay away from the Warriors because they play so hot. And now it's like that they have a chink, and I really mean a chink, and the armor is like, let me bring up that dish so I can throw it around the kitchen. Believe me, I'm not buying into it. Oh, let's worry about the Warriors, because to be honest, I thought that they should be able to go into Utah and win. I thought that they had too much firepower for Utah to deal with. And if you sat up here and told me that Utah would play the Warriors at home and you had a situation where Spider, a.k.a. Donovan Mitchell, scored under 16 points, or I think he had 16 to finish the game, that they would beat the Warriors, I'd be like, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. And not to say that this is the reason why that they lost, because Draymond hasn't been shooting the ball efficiently, but that's what made them scary. Even if Draymond was wide open at the top or on the wing somewhere, he was able to hit that shot. And now it's not falling. And he's actually aware of it, saying that once these shots start falling, it's going to put a whole lot of pressure on the team. So I think once he finds his way, I think that's when the pressure will start to mount for teams defensively on how they have to deal with at least the four of them, and start to see the consistent play of Boogie Cousins, which is soon to come too as well, where they'll have at least five All-Stars starting at one time for this team. So that should be crazy too when it comes into play. So everybody better get their licks in and their punches in now, because once Boogie comes in and they start finding that consistency, there's no double-teaming anywhere on that floor. There will be no double teams anywhere on the floor. So that's why I'm throwing that out there as of now. Okay. So here's another team and topic that I want to throw out here, and I want to see how RTV has to speak about this one, because the Los Angeles Clippers were at the top of the conference at one point in time. And in still, which I don't even find this a situation where you can overlook them and say, oh, they're just going to fall out of contention, because they do have a good amount of talent that is going under the radar and unnoticed at this point in time, but in which they are starting to lose their stronghold within the Western Conference. They are still in the top eight. They're on a four-game losing streak, and I don't know if this is the Clippers team that we've been clamoring to see or thinking that this could be them potentially, but I don't know, because there's other teams within the Western Conference starting to find their way, and the Clippers are slipping. if you will. I don't want to totally just jump the gun into their crawling, but I'll say they're slipping at this point in time. Your thoughts on the Clippers at this point in time as we approach 2019?
Well, Thomas, you're absolutely correct. The Clippers are slipping. But in my opinion, honestly, whatever the Los Angeles Clippers can achieve this season, it's a win for that organization and that collection of players and talent. I mean, bottom line, every player, for the most part, on that roster is a guy who's going to hang his hat on the defensive end. They have to play together. They have to compete together. And they have to, on the offensive side, share the ball and score together to get wins. Now, the four losses, does that mean that hasn't happened? No. It just means, you know, they played some games and been in some situations where the other teams just flat out better. And what I mean by that is more talent, offensive firepower, more talented team. And then again, you always have the schedule as an issue. There are sometimes scheduling losses. It's okay. But to be 17-13 with this roster, when you have a rookie point guard slash two guard, the 6'6 Shea Alexander, getting all the minutes he can handle, garnering all the experience he can, being in late game situations, it's priceless. Having a guy like Tobias Harris have a career year in your uniform. This could be his last season, but he's giving you all he has, and he's improved, you know, each season as an NBA player. Having Danilo Gallinari be healthy, to be available, to contribute what he brings to the table, and that is scoring, three-point shot-making ability, the ability to get to the rack and get to the free throw line. This is huge for this team. And then there's Montrezl Harrell. I mean, Montrezl Harrell was on the bench in Houston, I mean, getting spot minutes. The guy shows up in Los Angeles and he shows himself to be a player, to truly be an NBA player. He hustles. He's aggressive. He rebounds. He protects the rim. He's making shots, and he's getting better because he's getting all of these minutes right now. He's involved in pretty much every situation that he could see, and it's only going to help him be a better player going forward. And that's what's most important for Doc Rivers and these Los Angeles Clippers. And we're being reminded of the fact that, you know what, Doc Rivers is not a bad coach. He's still a championship caliber coach because, again, this isn't an uber-talented roster. But he is getting wins. What he's seeing is that within the standings, other teams that were below the Clippers, when the Clippers were sitting number one, they have gotten healthy, they have gotten in a rhythm, and they're starting to roll and cook. In particular, the Denver Nuggets. They're facing some injuries, but that team is deep, and so they're overcoming injuries, and they're rolling. The Oklahoma City Thunder finally overcame injuries to Russell Westbrook, figured out their lineup. Paul George has played in his career. They're rolling. Golden State is Golden State, so we're not panicking. And LeBron and the Lakers, for all of the talk about what's going on in La La Land, they're number four. Why? Because they've gotten better since the season started. So, again, the teams in front of the Clippers right now have more talent, and they've gotten better. They figure some things out. The Clippers have to just continue to grind, grind, grind. And if there's a trade that looks like it could do more for their season, then they have to, you know, consider that and make that decision when it faces them. But I have no issues with that roster staying intact as is and playing it out. This is a win-win season for the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm thoroughly impressed by the job Rivers and his coaching staff are getting done with this roster.
Okay, let me force feed you a little bit. And your boys being the Philadelphia 76ers sitting, I really want to say second place, but they're at third, depending on how you look at how the things are going in the Eastern Conference with the Raptors 24-9, and the Bucks are 21-9, but they still have three games to play to at least try to have the equivalent of the record of the Raptors, or the Raptors sit up there with the higher percentage. The Sixers are in third place right now, and I don't know how this can go, if they can actually get to leapfrog in the Bucks, if they can play consistent enough, or stay at third or fall. But your thoughts on this Sixers team right now, while they're having their issues dealing with health, while they've had, you know, significant player after player on the sideline able to play, they haven't really seen Fultz at all. I think they got rid of Fultz, you know, the idea of Fultz altogether with this team as well. I actually seen a link, I want to say within a week ago, where they said, is Joel Embiid the best player in the Eastern Conference? And I scratched my head because I'm like, it's interesting because if I look at that question, he is in the discussion with Giannis and Kawhi. So is he the best player in the Eastern Conference? And your thoughts on the Sixers team, how they should, well, how they can play moving forward?
Well, it's interesting, you know, where the Philadelphia 76ers are right now in terms of the state of conversation around this team. As you mentioned, they're sitting third in the Eastern Conference, but people don't speak confidently about what is happening with the Philadelphia 76ers based on the acquisition of Jimmy Butler, based on the statements of one Joel Embiid and trying to find out how things are going to go now. When you add a player with the gravity of, you know, Jimmy Butler, who honestly, in my opinion, Timeless, is a guy who, you know, as an NBA player, he's kind of proven he should be the first option. And I know a lot of people say, well, Jimmy's not a superstar. He's not a superstar. I'm like, I get it. We don't see Jimmy as a superstar, but his play says I'm arguably the best player on the team. And when we're playing a style of basketball predominantly in the current NBA where it's, you know, the wings eat first, to go to a team like Philadelphia where Embiid has been able to eat first since, you know, getting over his injuries to his foot and being able to be available on the court because Ben Simmons was not a shooter, though he was a ball dominant. He was a ball dominant player who understood that it's not about my offense. It's about Joel Embiid. And he made sure Joel Embiid feasted upon his opponents. And so now you enter Jimmy Butler. It's going to be difficult for Jimmy to play with a big like Embiid. We saw this last season when he was in Minnesota. And I think that was part of his issue there. How does he play second fiddle to a guy like Karl Anthony Towns? Where I think the difference now is, though, he knows, he can see that, one, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid leave nothing on the shelf. They're giving it to you night in and night out. So I really think the onus in Philly right now is going to be on Jimmy Butler to make this work because it needs to work. It can work, but it can go sideways as well. All that being said, this Sixers team needs to make some moves. They need to go out and address the fact that they're short in terms of talent in some key areas, and I would say shot making, playmaking. Without being dominant with the ball, without pounding it, and clutch shooting, someone who could be clutch in terms of an ISO in addition to a Jimmy Butler, and as well as not just hit a big shot coming off the screen like a Redick. And Timeless, we hadn't really got a chance to talk about this, but I've been looking at the play of one D'Angelo Russell in Brooklyn and thinking back to the 2015 draft when the Lakers selected D'Angelo Russell and left Jahlil Okafor on the board, when at that time that Lakers organization team really needed a big and not a guard. Right. And the impact of D'Angelo Russell having to grind it out in L.A. through the final days of Kobe Bryant and really stunted his growth being in L.A., but he's better for it now because we can see his play in Brooklyn. And I think Philadelphia still has the opportunity, should Elton Brand and management really, you know, do their due diligence and look at what it would cost, what it would take to make a deal with the Nets and go out and get D'Angelo Russell, because I think D'Angelo's play right now is something that answers, fills the void in Philadelphia. I mean, look, he doesn't need the ball, but he can catch and shoot. You know, if plays break down, he can get his own shot. He can create for others, and he proved it, and he keeps proving it. The young man has ice in his veins, and I would have no problem seeing Markel Fultz shipped to Brooklyn in exchange for D'Angelo Russell, who, in my opinion, is exactly what they wanted and needed in 2015 but didn't get. And they tried to get a knockoff, if you will, in Markel Fultz. And I'm not throwing shade to anyone. Whatever's going on with Markel Fultz, with his shoulder, or if he just wants to get out and get a fresh start, I say the organization makes that happen. Let's throw no one under the bus, but let's address what's needed. They need a player, in my opinion, like a D'Angelo Russell, who would be, I'm sure, more than happy to be in a winning, competitive environment that allows him to be at his best and be on a big stage night in and night out.
Look at this guy putting salt on my dish. I cook, man. I cook. You don't have to put no salt or seasoning on my food, okay? You could just eat.
I
you know what I mean?
I just thought I spicy.
He had to bring some Lowry's in there, some Sazon. Like, he just had to just tweak it. Like, just eat a little bit, just a little bit. But I understand where you're coming from, because I'm going to be honest and I'm going to be personal. Forget cooking and everything we do in the kitchen and chefs. I'm going to be personal. I like, well, let me just say it the right way. I like what I saw in college with Markel Fultz when he was coming out of Washington. I thought that would transition and coming to Philly and him playing that style of play with Ben Simmons and Embiid, I thought it would be monstrous, and it just hasn't worked out. So with Royce seasoning the dish, it's like, well, they both get to start fresh, because ideally this was a team that Royce was actually saying that, you know, D'Angelo could fall into place, and I was like, that would be interesting. But it hadn't, and now with you throwing this situation out there, it could present itself, and it could be a fresh start for both players, not only Markel, but D'Angelo Russell, even though he's on a Nets team that's actually been playing well as of late, too. So I don't know if he's comfortable there, if the organization wants to keep him, but this is something to keep your eyes on, or if they do send somebody else to Philadelphia and get the, you know, the Fultz move to come to Brooklyn, which I doubt. I think they would want some quality player. So it would be interesting to see that happen. But just tell him to get out of my pot. Just tell him to eat how I'm cooking. He's been eating everything I've been cooking since. Now we changed. So I think this is 2019 coming up. He's trying to change. Okay, he got his Obama on. It's okay. No problem. Okay. Now, I'm going to bring a little, I want to say, personal question, if you will, to Arkeevy in the kitchen, and you don't have to. You can answer however you want, analytically or personally or whatever. But your thoughts on the brow and everybody making this big ordeal where he changed agents and is with LeBron's agent, and will he go here? Will he go to Boston? Will he go to Los Angeles? Or does he stay in New Orleans, where he could probably get big money in New Orleans too, after they just threw him that $145 million contract? He probably can go to L.A. and soak up some money. He can go to Boston if he can get Kyrie and the crew to stay there. I mean, your thoughts. I mean, all purpose. You can answer this however you like. Your thoughts on the brow. I mean, to me, it'll hurt me to see him leave New Orleans, because there would be nobody there if he left. I mean, they just watched Boogie leave. He leaves. They just lost Rondo. I mean, even though Rondo is still a quality player, I won't say good because he's older, but it will just be Jrue Holiday, Randle, Mirotic, and, like, role players, you know what I'm saying, where Anthony was everything for the Pelicans organization. But your thoughts, and I don't, you know, you don't have to play by the gun, even though you never do anyway. You do what you want to do. You season the food now. So your thoughts on Anthony Davis.
Well, let me start here. First, facts. The New Orleans Pelicans, through the 2021 season, should he choose to pick up that season's player option, right? So he's going nowhere on his own. Management is going to have to make the decision that, one, we have a strong sense Anthony no longer wants to be here, or you ask him directly and he says, I no longer want to be here, right? And if he says he doesn't want to be here, or you have a as a general manager, you have a gut feeling, strong inclination, whatever the case, but I believe you should talk business face to face, talking about grown-ups here, find out where you stand. If you're buying into all of this, but if you are, again, management, you don't have to buy into the conversation piece. You can say it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. Bottom line, the facts. He's under contract through 2021 with the player option. So let's proceed with what needs to happen to keep Anthony Davis wanting to be here. That's where Thomas, the roster of the New Orleans Pelicans, comes into play. And there's nothing about this roster, in my opinion, that right now has Anthony Davis thinking and believing he's going to win a championship. Forget a championship. That he's going to win four rounds in the playoffs. That he's going to the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals with the New Orleans Pelicans. So, with all that being said by yours truly, in my opinion, management now needs to actually say, let's be creative and let's look at when is the right time to strike and get a deal done. Because here's the thing. If Anthony Davis leaves the New Orleans Pelicans, some people in Seattle might get really excited, because why would you have a team in New Orleans if you trade? I mean, if you as an organization initiate a deal that sends your best player, a once-in-a-lifetime player, you send them away. And if you don't get a haul, I mean a bag, you have to move the franchise. And everybody knows there needs to be a team in the right situation to justify it being relocated to Seattle, because the league is not about to expand and put an expansion team in Seattle. So I think a lot of stuff could be brewing around Anthony Davis and the New Orleans Pelicans. But when it comes to Anthony Davis himself, I don't think it's about, I'm not buying all the, you know, what he signed with Clutch Sports and Rich Paul's his agent. So it's a lock. He's going to LA. So you think Anthony Davis to L.A. does what? Because what happens when LeBron is no longer in L.A.? And who's there with Anthony Davis? Do the current pieces fit with Anthony Davis and not LeBron? I mean, it's just too much, and we're too far out. I mean, one season at a time, because you can get lost and you could punt away year after year after year, constantly talking about, well, not this year, but next year. And then when that year rolls around, but not this year, but next year, again, not this year, but next year, who's coming in the draft or who's going to be in the free agent pool. And I mean, like, come on, when do you really compete? And I think the New Orleans Pelicans fan base really needs the general manager, I believe his name is Demps, to he's got to figure out a way to make it happen. And let's be very, very honest right now. No one wants Elfrid Payton. And if you're going to keep Anthony Davis, I hate to say it, I hate to do it, but if you're going to keep Anthony Davis, and if you're really going to prove to AD you're about winning, this is currently the healthiest Drew Holiday has, for the most part, been. I mean, I think he played like 81 games last season. So these couple of years here, Drew Holiday has kind of returned to form, but he's absolutely playing his best basketball, in my opinion, of his career right now, this season. You cannot wait till the trade deadline to move Drew Holiday. You have to be an initiator. So here I am throwing some more seasoning on this dish, Timeless, and you have to flip Drew Holiday for complimentary pieces that talent-wise are so intriguing to AD, where AD says, I like the guys. Like, look, I love Drew. I'm going to miss Drew. But these guys that came in, they're young. They got upside. It's ridiculous. And we can be a problem. And so I want to stay because, what, AD is still, what, 25? I think he's 25, Thomas. Is he older than 25? He's 25
years old. I think he's
24,
25. I think he is 24, 25.
Yeah, there it is. March 11th. What is that? 93. 25 years old. So he's still got plenty of prime left. Plenty of prime. I mean, look, AD probably should have a whole nother decade of basketball to play. Is it in New Orleans? Is what everyone's trying to figure out. It's up to the management to get the personnel around AD that says this is what it takes to win with AD, much like everyone has done with LeBron James everywhere he's been his entire career. They build around him. I've yet to see a season, honestly, since AD's been in the league where the general manager says we know exactly what it takes to build around AD. And so therein lies the problem and the issue with the New Orleans Pelicans, and they must solve that.
Well, Smith, I'm about to just let this dude cook because he likes his reseasoning and adding salt to my dish. So you know what? I'm throwing my apron in for the rest of it. No, I'm just joking. But since he likes to spice up my dishes and play with my teams and stuff, so I'm going to do this. You know what, New Orleans, I hope you're listening because I got a bag, right, and I want you to take it. And you can send Anthony Davis to Oklahoma City for Andre Roberson, Patrick Patterson, and Nader, and a draft pick. And listen, we'll just do that. We'll just do that. Just straight up, we'll give you three pieces in the pick, and Anthony and everybody else is forming bomb squad teams. Why can't I get a bomb squad team? And here goes another one that wants to actually try to re-spice. Can't get rid of Anthony Davis. Seattle should be real happy. Like, he know my heart is still in Seattle. Like, so they're not have to have two teams. Please, Pelicans, stay still. Don't nobody move. In Seattle, y'all are just fine. Y'all are just – the only way it happens is if OKC go back up there. That's the only way. That's the only way I would allow another team go back up to Seattle. I do not want to have two teams, and that will really put me to the fire. And especially if they name the team the Sonics. Like, I couldn't. Like, I'd be ripped to shreds. I couldn't. Okay. That was my little rant that I had to get out there. I'm curious that he had to do this one. So – the next one that I have, and Royce likes to, you know, make me do it, you know, especially when I'm at the end of the show or try to pump me up. But I'm going to do it in the middle of the show, but I'm not going to pump myself up. But your thoughts on this Thunder team right now, right? And this is all you. I don't want to feed myself. I'm good. But your thoughts on this Thunder team, they are actually in second place right now. I did not think that at this point in time, that they would be ahead of a interesting Warriors team. I don't want to say struggling because we just went over what's been going on right now, and I do not want to put that in anybody's mind that the Warriors are less of a team than the Thunder or what have you. I don't even want to set that title up. But your thoughts on this Thunder team right now, and I just talked about AD. There is talks about if Paul George can be considered as an MVP player, which I agree that he is, as of now, and I guess I kind of have to throw my bias in there because I am a Thunder fan. That's why I don't like talking about my team. But what he's been able to do in this portion of the season right now, every statistical category that he has, this has been his best career season across the board. Points, rebounds, steals, assists, everything. I don't know how. And okay, so I'm really getting personal. See, this is why I don't like talking about my team. I don't know how Billy Donovan is able to do this. And Billy Donovan was a coach when he was in college. I just didn't like me. And here goes the storyline again because of the way they beat Georgetown that year in the postseason and the big dance or whatever. But he's been an offensive genius when he was in coaching college. And somehow, some way, he had to fill out that first season with Durant and Westbrook. He jumped right in the midst of that melee of them going back and forth. Durant leaves in his 1 year with Russ, and Russ had an MVP season, got the best offensive caliber out of Russ that season. The next season was the Melo, PG, and Russ, you know, experiment where it didn't work, but he was trying to get all of these, you know, offensive powerhouses to make it work, and now it's back to the scheduled program of PG and Russ, and it's you can include PG in the conversation. They have him on the outside looking in, but I mean, your thoughts on the Thunder team and the play of Paul George at this point in time?
All right, well, hand me the seasoning because I'm about to put a little bit of sauce on it, a little lime, little Goya. I mean, let's go here, right? First of all, apologies because I said they weren't making the playoffs. I said they were out simply because so much had been going on since Billy Donovan came into the league and became head coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he's had to deal with a significant situation, if you will, season upon season to this season. Kudos to Billy Donovan for being able to quickly, together with Dennis Schroeder, Jeremy Grant, Hamidou Diallo, Stephen Adams, give me another rotation player that's currently playing a good a bit of minutes. Ferguson, right?
Well, Ferguson's the starter. Well, Abrines is off the bench too.
Right. So you take those names. Add Nerlens Noel, right?
Oh God.
In the mix, and then you say, this is what has to contribute and make this thing work next to Russell and Paul. And here's what's huge for this organization and for head coach Billy Donovan, that Paul George decided Oklahoma City, and I'm not taking another interview. I'm not waiting for anybody's domino to fall first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be first, and I'm going to say I'm staying in Oklahoma. What that did immediately was settle everything. Now there's no speculation going on. There's nothing swirling around Oklahoma City. Everyone in that locker room knows it is about going out, game in and out, to perform at your highest level. They battled some injuries. Like I said, Russ was missing. He was dealing with injury. He comes back. He's still not shooting his typical percentages from the free throw line. But nonetheless, you're still getting Russell Westbrook, who does a little bit of everything every night. But the special sauce is Paul George's career year under Billy Donovan. It's not in Indiana. It's in Oklahoma City. The best year of his career right now. I mean, look, when this guy is putting up over 20 shots and shooting 50%, you know, regularly right now, this is a beautiful stretch of the season. Now, it doesn't lead me to say all of a sudden that Paul George is an MVP candidate. Absolutely not. I can't say that. I'm not going to say that unless he does this same thing percentage-wise, production-wise, January, February, March, April. Like, he has to do this the remainder of the season to be a serious MVP candidate, because there have been many seasons that have gone by in the past as a person who was privy, you know, and in proximity to be able to see the Indiana Pacers. Paul George, numerous seasons, come out guns blazing and have an outstanding first month of the season, and then it kind of just be downhill from there, right? Right now, you're talking about a guy who decided to just get started, you know, mid to late November, and is cruising in December. I mean, cruising like it's never going to stop. So let's not jinx it. Keep up the good work, Paul George. Continue to perform. But it is Billy Donovan. He has figured out his rotation. He's settled on the rotation. He's confident in the players he has. They go out and do the things that he asked them to do in terms of performance. And look, not enough can really be said about Stephen Adams and what he gets done in that painted area, rebounding, right, being able to finish those lobs, and just bringing a certain amount of toughness, you know, to that team in the front court. And then I love the athleticism of Jeremy Grant and the fact that he has improved significantly on the offensive end. So it's almost like a perfect storm, if you will, in Oklahoma right now, where guys who have been waiting to, you know, take another step or get to that next level via consistency in their performance have done so this season, in this current stretch of the season, if you will, under Billy Donovan, and it secured him that extension, which I think was only right because the organization gave him so much to deal with each year, as you alluded to. It was Kevin Durant. You come, you staying, or you going? He leaves. Then we bring in Carmelo Anthony. Does it work? Is it not going to work? It didn't work, so he's out. Then you bring in Dennis Schroeder. And he was a starting point guard. Now you ask him to be a backup, and he's succeeding. And it works. And he's looking like what I thought he could be, and that is the next head coach to win an NCAA championship and an NBA championship. Billy Donovan can get it done. They must stay healthy. Presti has to continue to make all the right decisions when it comes to this roster. Russell Westbrook and Paul George remain the catalyst. I like it. I'm impressed. And that's all I want to see from the Thunder.
Sports City, I cannot believe what I just heard. I cannot believe what I just heard. I'm knocking on all types of wood. I can't get that bored. Oh, boy. I don't even know
what kind of bomb was that?
Hey, that's the only one they gave me. That's the only sound I got. But I got some work to do, but I'm taking it right now. Believe me, it blew up. I need a bigger one. I'm going to work on it. You know how this sound key works. Anyway, you got me getting straight off the
crazy.
Huh?
I said the whistle on that bomb was crazy. Drop that again.
Hey, one more time. Okay, here we go.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so wow, I don't even know where to start on this. Now, first of all, let me get back to where he kicked off at, right? The Paul George situation. I understand where you're coming from, that he needs to continue this throughout the year, and that's for all of the candidates. That's for all of them. Giannis, Kawhi, Steph Curry. Steph's been missing time too. Paul's been playing more games, so they have to consider that. LeBron, of course, and you got to give LeBron credit for where the Lakers were the past three or four seasons, including two of them with Kobe, and where they are now. And the fifth one, I think, is Anthony Davis. They have five people in front of him. I think it is Anthony Davis, if I'm not mistaken, that are ahead of Paul George. I think Paul George may be sixth or seventh on the MVP list, but he's out if you're looking at the top five. Of course, they all have to consistently play that way. So I understand where you're coming from, but that goes to everybody. You know what I'm saying? And in which, and you know, out of anybody that run on these shows with me and talk to me on a daily basis, you know how much I love Russ, right? But Russ always come up with some crazy stuff in the midst of a game, or have a crazy turnover, take a crazy shot, where to me, personally, that I question the IQ at sometimes. And then when he gets pissed, it's like that's the Russ you want to see, because then he has a point to prove. You know what I'm saying? In which, in the midst of all of this, Paul George has been carrying this Thunder team for them to be number two in the Western Conference. He's been doing it. Like, of course, you get consistent play out of Steven Adams. He's going to be the guy that they focus on at the early portion of the game to get the offense flowing and get a lot of the offense to open up with feeding Steve. You know what I'm saying? So they open up with Steven, and everybody else starts to, you know, flourish their game around what the big man creates. So I like the way that Billy Donovan has been working this. In the midst of this, Russell Westbrook is shooting below 70% from the free throw line. He's missing a ton of free throws. I don't know what the heck is going on. I don't know if it's the deep breath or his adrenaline or what, but How do you fall from 84-83% free throw shooting to 60-something percent free throw shooting? That's horrible. That's a bad drop off. I don't even want to say that's decent or mediocre. That's horrible for him to be shooting the quality of a big man from the free throw line, and he's a point guard, i.e. a two-time scoring leader. You know what I'm saying? So that's something that I've been watching. Another thing for Billy Donovan, too, is he brought an equalizer and an X-factor in. And I got to give more or less to Billy Donovan, but also Sam Presti, and that sometimes it, in my own mind, I just question Sam Presti, like, what the heck are you doing? But at this point in time, I give these two credit. At this point in time, I give them credit. The one balancer is Dennis Schroeder. When Russ comes down the floor and does some crazy stuff and has that erratic play where he wants to get people started and it just, you know, turnover or questionable shot, so on and so forth, they bring Schroeder in. It's kind of like that pill that somebody needs to take to calm down. And it's like Schroeder helps Russ calm down, and then Schroeder could score or play off of Russ or play and then give Paul George a shot to make. And it's the basketball essence. Like, I like the way that style gets played. So he is the real spoon to mix this all up after, like, the first set of substitutions come in. And more or less it is Schroeder that comes in first. So he could potentially be a six-man candidate, but I doubt it, but they could look at it. I'm being pushy. I'm being one of those the fans, if you will. But I don't want to push that envelope. But the X factor on the team, a lot of people will not give any credit to on this Thunder team. And I am so happy that Presti did it, is Nerlens Noel. Oh, my goodness. When Roy said his name, I almost, like, passed out, almost fainted, like I was in church. Like this guy is for real. I've never been able to say this about any team that I followed, including the Thunder, but just saying the Thunder specifically, and it's basketball related. I've never said it's beyond what they do outside of the stat book. You know what I'm saying? Like, you used to see an X-Factor player give you, you know, anything over 12 points off the bench or 7 rebounds off the bench or whatever have you. It's not what he's doing on the stat book. It's more or less what he's doing on the floor. He helps control the defense. He blocks and contests shots. He's a big that can step out and hit a jump shot. He can hit free throws. And his defense is on par, you know, to be up there with some of the best. Not I don't want to say he's the best, but some of the best bigs in the paint. And he's a game changer. When he comes in the game, it's not like I'm, like, holding my breath on what's coming next. It's like I clap my hands and be like, okay, well, he can help us defensively and get some stops. When he's on the floor, his plus minus is good. So I love what Nerlens Noel has been able to do with this team. I call him the under-the-radar X-Factor. A lot of people still, when they watch the Thunder games, they're really like, well, what are we watching with Nerlens Noel? Just watch closely with what he's able to do. The one thing that does scare me right now, and I mean, people like their team, but I love my team, is the month of January is approaching, and Andre Roberson is set to come back. So, like, I'm kind of on a seesaw about this. And you got a lot of people analytically talking about it. Well, he's one of their defensive juggernauts, and he's going to increase their steals now, and they're the best defensive team in the league, and they average so many steals. And Russell's been able to get 5 steals a game the past 3 games and things like that. I'm like, Billy Donovan, don't mess it up. Please, if Andre Roberson come back, let him get his feel in the game. Don't just automatically start him and things will work out because everything has been flowing, even though I'm not big on Terrence Ferguson. Like, Terrence Ferguson will hit a shot there or, you know, get a dunk here, but you don't see the consistent play. But I the confidence in his jump shot, to me, is the confidence that Andre Roberson needs, you know? So it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I understand they're ready to get him out there, get him to get the feel of the game and see if their defense can increase. If he comes back and helps this defense increase more than what they were able to do now, and knowing that him and Steven Adams have a great brother relationship, but I don't even want to call it a friendship. These guys are like brothers. And Russ loves them too. Russ is big about Andre too. So if it gets better defensively for the Thunder with Andre Roberson coming back, that'll be an interesting thing to see. But knowing that he has to shake at least a year of rust off and get in the NBA play while everybody will be in mid-season condition, he's going to just be getting his wheels back underneath him. So these are some things that I'm worried about one thing that I'm worried about for the Thunder is the approach of Andre Roberson's arrival or, you know, due to come back after the injury that he's had a setback as well as this season. But, again, like I said, the Paul George MVP talk, I definitely have to consider him, especially while Russ has struggled They don't really have another big piece that's given them a lot of points, but it's been a team effort. And Paul George is the leader in scoring right now, even though Russ is the head of the monster because he's the point guard that runs the show. But Paul George has been the guy to carry the team while Russ has struggled. And this is the crazy part about Paul George. I don't even remember him being this expressive or talkative. At the end of the games, they're interviewing Paul George. They ain't even really in Russ' face. They're asking him what's going on with Russ and how do you feel about this. And he's been answering the Russell questions. Like he is man up to answer the Russell questions. And I don't want to pick at Kevin Durant, but Kevin Durant shied away from those. Like, you know, don't worry about us. We'll take care of it in-house, you know, stuff like that. Now it's like Paul George is going to war for him just like Russell go to war for him. So it's interesting. It's interesting, but I don't want to start jinxing this too early. And especially, like I said, I don't want to jinx too early. I want to see what Andre Roberson looks like after this recovery as well. Anything else before I get away from that topic, Roy?
No, I'm good.
Okay. We are getting close to the rundown at the end of the show. I have one more dish before we get out of here. Is there anything that you wanted to address before we get away from it?
No, I really can't think of anything. Unless you want to get into a little bit of conversation about those Christmas Day games, since, you know, that slate of games will occur before we're back here in the kitchen.
Yeah, because I know we have a new show Monday that we're trying to put out to the people, but Monday is the Christmas Eve special, too, on Monday, so I'm going to try and get that one in the works. Okay, we can go over the Christmas games. The next topic I had was the Nuggets, but, I mean, we talk about them. I mean, we could go to the Nuggets or we could go to the games. How do you want to do it? I could do either or.
I'm flexible. Hit them both. It ain't going to take me that long.
You want to cook on the Nuggets?
Okay. Well, when it comes to the Denver Nuggets, all I'm going to say is, didn't I tell you, Thomas, in the beginning?
Now give me your thoughts. That was the season I was going to bring. I wanted to see where you were going to go, and I was just going to season it, just one little speck of dash. That's all I want to do, just touch it a little bit, just to give you a little bit. But first and foremost, the addition of Nick Young, he is one of their energy players, if not the energy player. If he hits a shot, it's like not only the team, but if they're playing in Denver, it's like they all feed off of his energy. They just want to see him knock down the three, and then he gets going. That's like the confidence he needs, you know what I'm saying? And secondly, I need something back from you too, but I'm going to give you your credit first because he's my big brother, so I got to. I'm awake now on Monty Morris. I'm awake. I'm up. I don't drink coffee at all, but I smell it. I will give you your kudos. You know, congratulations. I don't even want to call it congratulations, but you know, every accolade you deserve on that one. I'm awake. But I need some back from you too, though.
I need some back from you too.
Mason Plumlee has actually been playing decent for them too. So, and you were dissing him for years. So you got to give him some credit too while he's doing it. But Jokic, Murray, and also, I mean, Beasley's been effective for them too. The confidence for Juan Hernan Gomez too. I mean, he shoots from anywhere, everywhere. He don't care who's being him. He's even going to the lane, too. They have an interesting team across the board and pieces coming off the bench. This Nuggets team is nothing to play with right now. They are for real at this point in time of the season. And Jokic should be one of the players in the MVP discussion as well. Anything else that you'd like to add to that also?
Now, that's the guy that we have to talk about. You know, you don't have to wonder should we conversate for MVP. You have to because – he is the focal point of a very, very, very deep, young, veteran-laden team. Like, I mean, who's the rookie that's playing? It's not Michael Porter Jr., is it? No. Monte Morris is in his second season, right? I think Jamal Murray's in his, third season? Gary Harris, I think, has been around maybe 4 years now, right? So you're talking a team full of young vets and a quality, I don't mean subpar. I don't mean solid. I don't mean just okay. But I mean of the finest, highest quality head coach in Mike Malone, Sacramento, I think you made a mistake. But, hey, it is what it is. Water under the bridge. Keep doing what you're doing. Move along. But in Denver, Mike Malone has every guy believing in what it is he brings to the table. They're sharing the ball. You don't see stuff like when you're watching some games where it's kind of like, okay, that's my guy. He open. I know he wanted the key cogs to our success, but I'm going to look him off and take it myself because I need to get mine. And I see that with a lot of young teams. Sometimes, you know, I see it in Phoenix. Sometimes I see that stuff in Orlando, with some of these other young teams that are struggling trying to find their way. But this Denver Nuggets squad moves the ball, and credit Nikola Jokic, who is, in my opinion, an MVP candidate, because this team, the Denver Nuggets are going to continue to roll. They're going to continue to roll. And so then the question for the voters for league MVP, how many games do the Nuggets as a team have to win? What seed does the team have to get? What else does he need to do numbers-wise to be a serious, a legitimate, in their language, contender for MVP? Because let's just be clear. If this team, Tanya, is the number one seed in the West, everybody is eating humble pie. It's going to be a remnant of people, if you will, that has the Denver Nuggets being the best team in the West, being the number one seed. And if that happens, and if they get out of not just the first round, but they get into that second round, and the matchup is favorable because they've either tied the season series or won that season series against whoever that second round foe is, I'm like, come on, man. You might have to really send an MVP trophy to Denver. Adam Silver might have to get that plane ticket, or actually, should I say, take that jet and land in Mile High Basketball and present the MVP to Nikola Jokic. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying, like, let's not make a case for why it shouldn't. I think there needs to be more conversation of making a case of why it could and it should, if winning really counts and winning really matters. This is a good team. They're young. They're deep. Hey, it's the Nuggets, baby.
I'm trying, Sportsity. I'm cooking now, man. And it's interesting to see what the Nuggets are up to right now, especially if everything as it stands right now, which I think it will change around. They would play the Spurs first round. That would be a hell of a 1-8. That would be a hell of a 1-8 matchup if it stayed the way it is right now, which I think it'll change. I think the Spurs may make up some ground. If they stay there and another stay put, boy, my popcorn is ready. You hear me? Like, I'm getting Pop Secret, Global Red and Baca, everything. I am going to be ready for that one. And depending on how things may pan out in the second round, if everything were to stay still, it'd be the Lakers and Blazers. I think that would even be another tough task, too, whether he's going up against LeBron or he's going up against Dame and CJ, who, to me, is between Kyrie and CJ with the best crossovers in the game. Like I know a lot of people say Jamal Crawford, but if you see CJ really want to use his crossover, there's no guard that can say it
right.
I don't care what you're telling me. If he wants to yank you, he can put it outside of his body like Iverson. Not to say it was the caliber of Iverson, but he will hurt you if you're playing him close. So it could be interesting depending on how that Blazers-Lakers series does turn out if it were to stay as it is right now. So this Western Conference is still crazy. I don't know how people still – well, I don't think people are saying it anymore, because if you look at how the Eastern Conference is looking right now, it is really the top 16 that are above 500 or 7, I think. Let me look at the standings. I think it may be 6. I'm lying. So it's 7. So the 8th seed is under 500. Everything under 8 and lower is under 500. So, and if you look at 12 through, they're not even double-digit winners. But this Western Conference is still a mess. every team is liable to beat you. Even now with Phoenix going into Boston and beating Boston and Devin still shooting the lights out, I mean, it could happen to you on any given night from any team in the Western Conference. And Denver's sitting on top of it all. The bad part about everything that's happening with Denver and their success right now is a player that I do like that's not there any longer. Was Kenneth Faried the problem? Like, they got rid of him and they're winning like this? Why is the Manimal the problem? I love him, man. But, I mean, the defensive prowess gets questioned, something on the offensive side questioned, but he's at the bottom of the bench in Brooklyn. It's like, man, like, what happened? So I don't want to make it look like that. Okay, Archie, I mean, what do you want to do here? You tell me. We could extend.
Here it is. We're about to wrap it up. So as we hear you wrap up, we're going to go out with the Christmas game. So here's my question to you, Timeless. Of the five games, for you, which is must-see TV on Christmas Day? Is it the 12 p.m. game, game one, between Milwaukee, Thunder, and Houston Rockets? Is it game three, Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics? Is it game four, 8 o'clock, Los Angeles Lakers versus the Golden State Warriors? Or the final game, Portland Trail Blazers versus the Utah Jazz? Now, the homer in you, hands down, I already know the answer. You're definitely going to watch OKC.
No, you don't know the answer.
But what's outside of being a fan and supporter of your favorite team, which is must-see TV and why for you?
You don't even know. This is including them. So now. So this is including them. So take that with you. Spike that up. they all have it. Like every last bit of these games have it. Okay. So let me. First and foremost, number one game would be you guys, the Sixers in Boston, because I don't know what Boston is going to look like in these games coming up to that one. And it has turned into a special little rivalry ever since from back in the day until – and they revitalized the situation as of now. So right now I think number one would be Philly and Boston. This game's taking place in Boston as well. And if Philly could win that game in Boston, it would be another discussion in itself, especially the way that last season went down where they were going home at home all throughout that season. So I'm saying Philly and Boston is number one, right? Number two, I really think that Portland-Utah game, the late-night capper, would be the number two because you really got Dame and Spider going at it, and Spider being a Connecticut guy. So it's like I love to see him do good, especially I didn't like to see him do good in the first round last year because I was against my boys, but his where he's from is basically the border of my city, Greenwich border Stanford. So it's like he was repping. So it's like I couldn't be too mad, but I was pissed my boys were out of the playoffs. So I like that matchup. Then it kind of, you know, falls into place. So I'll go number three, Milwaukee up against the Knicks because of the way that Hezonja dunked on Giannis. And Giannis said, believe me, the next time we play, well, guess what? It's on Christmas. This game is going to be war. And that sets Christmas off at 12 o'clock. And then I'll go fourth with the Los Angeles Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. I just don't find it fair because they're playing in Oracle and LeBron is – starting to feel this team out, but I don't think they'll beat the Warriors. I think the Warriors will handle them handedly. And I'll take my team for number five up against Houston because it's in Houston, and Houston has been dangerous in games past going up against Oklahoma City. So I'll say the Thunder and the Rockets game for last, but that's more of an emotional game for me because my cousin that passed was a Rockets fan, and I'm the Thunder fan, and we would always talk, jump, and go at it on each other on this matchup, and it's not there anymore. So I'll save this for fifth.
Got you. Well, I like how you did that, so I'm going to do it a little bit differently, and I'm going to just say I'm going to see this kind of like a sandwich, and game one of the Bucks and Knicks at noon and game five of the Blazers and Jazz, that's the bread. The meat and cheese is in the middle. 3 o'clock, 5:30, 8 o'clock. Thunder Rockets, Sixers Celtics, Lakers Warriors. You have to see those three games. And I agree with you, not being a homer, but look, it's Boston, Philly. The rivalry is absolutely renewed. Sixers have to prove that they're the best team in the East, at least when it comes to those two getting together and settling that beef. They have to respond. They've been knocked around to this point by the Boston Celtics. Boston's struggling right now. They're facing injuries, but you can't care. teams can't use that as an excuse. So Philly has to go into Boston with Jimmy Butler and punch those guys in the mouth and let them know, we'll see you in the postseason. Then it's the Thunder, the Rockets, CP3, Harden, George, Westbrook. I mean, I think it's going to be a three-point shootout. I mean, the guys are going to be constantly complaining to the officials about calls. Fans will be sitting at home begging for a travel on James Harden and won't get it. Like, yeah, that's must-see TV right there. It'd be entertaining. And then it's LeBron and whoever against the Golden State Warriors, right? It's just like having LeBron in Cleveland, but it's not Cleveland. It's literally the Lakers, and there is talent on this Laker team. And if LeBron can get the best from his guys, I think the game will be closer than some might anticipate. And because it's Christmas Day, I just think it's going to be a full of drama game. It'll come down to the last 60 seconds of that contest. I'm not going to pick a winner today, but I'm saying it's must-see TV. So that's my thoughts on the meat of Christmas Day, Thomas.
Okay, well, there you have it. And two different perspectives, even though we found a common ground on a lot of these dishes. It felt good to get back in the kitchen with Big Homie. So you already know what to do, Arkeezy, man. It's been a great one. Let's get a close. I'll shut this thing down. We'll have a discussion. Y'all stay tuned to see what happens Monday with a new show title, new scheme on everything as well. Arkeezy, give us a closeout.
Hey, man, look, you know who it is. It's your boy, Arkeezy, Royce King. Follow me on Twitter, at Royce King. Hey, check out some new work additional that we're doing outside the kitchen as we continue to grow everything that we do, man. Follow the NBA on Twitch. Had the opportunity to give my fantasy take on the NBA Fantasy Hour available on Twitch. The link is on my Twitter account, man. But this right here, Sports City Chef, Crossover Cafe, you know how we get down every Thursday. Don't be anywhere else. Be right here. Get it live. And if you can't, get it on demand. Subscribe. Rock with us. It's the Crossover Cafe. And I'm out.
SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog of the chefs. We'll be back here Saturday. Man, got a lot of stuff to get into. I got a lot of work to do. I got a new year in front of me, and I still got my big brother with me. We got some new stuff going on as of Monday, trying to get this full schedule back loaded in Sports City. Y'all already know the slogan. Tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know. That's all I got. I'm gone.